Adams.
Here.
Adam Lee.
Here.
Adamowski. Adamson.
Here.
Adler.
Here.
Anderson. Anderson.
Here.
Bueller. Bueller. Bueller.
Oh yeah, Cave of Solitude, we are back. This is episode 13, we're coming along. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and I am joined by... So Miss, what is your actual name for people who are listening for the first time?
Welcome back, folks! You're here to listen to... Daphne J.
Daphne J.
I think it's bit in the center of my mouth a little bit.
So this week, as you can tell from the intro music, we are switching gears. We are going back in time to 1986, and we're going to be discussing one of the all-time greats in the movie realm, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. When you hear that song, the Oh Yeah from Yellow, what comes to your mind, Daph J?
Okay, I'll tell you what comes to my mind.
Talk to me.
I can't... I tried YouTubing it to confirm my... what I thought.
Right.
But it makes me think of the chocolate bar Oh Henry.
Okay.
And I remember something... like, I remember when I was younger, like... I remember, like, the peanuts and the caramel falling into, like, this swirliness of chocolate. And you just hear, oh, yeah. You know?
And you just looked... it was so funny. You just looked up one of the old commercials of the Old Henry because you thought that was the one. And it was so funny that the person in that commercial who was looking for the Old Henry bar...
who was saying, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no. He was having a panic attack.
Because he had just a bunch of unwrapped or opened Oh Henry wrappers everywhere.
And he couldn't find a fresh one.
No.
And it was Tom Cavanaugh. And for those who don't know who Tom Cavanaugh is, I'm sure most of you listening to this show do, he plays Dr. Harrison Wells on the Flash television show. And he was a Oh Henry addict back in the day. And it's funny you mention Oh Henry... because today, I was at a bookstore downtown. I was in the upper level of BMV Books looking for comic books. And the guy who works there had a 3-pound bag of O. Henry bars.
What?
And he said, help yourself. So I want to send a shout out to Seven. He does listen to the show. He does play it in the store. And he is a big fan of yours.
Hey there,
everybody's Seven? A fan. Yeah, everybody's a fan of you. Okay, so as I was saying, Seven, he's a big fan of yours. He really likes the show, and he specifically likes some of the Double MIS episodes that you've been on. And it's inspired him to look up some comic books himself that he says he's going to try reading. And he said as well that he wants to start his own podcast up.
How cool is that?
Isn't that cool?
Wow.
So, inspiring one listener at a time. And he told me today that he played our Hulk Gray episode in the store.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean in the store?
Well, like while he's working, there's a little speaker box and he played the episode in the store. So, I mean, it fits the surroundings, right?
I thought you meant like within the store.
Like the entire store? Yeah. Well, that whole upper level is hearing your voice, so you're under pressure now.
No way.
Yes,
but
way.
But the Hulk Gray, I think we were kind of like very mellow.
It's okay.
It was a very heavy...
No, that's okay. That's okay. It goes with the tone of the book, right?
Yes, but we are consistent here in the cave.
So this week we're a little bit more upbeat because we are discussing Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the 1986 John Hughes classic movie. Would you agree with me it's a classic?
Absolutely a classic.
And if I'm not mistaken, and I'm... usually not, because I'm just the expert at everything. But this is one of your favorite movies, mm-hmm. Correct?
It totally is.
I remember when I had asked you years ago to list what your favorite movie was. I think this came in at the top of your list. How come? Why is this movie so... why is it you have this attachment to it?
I just thought it was such a fun... it was just a fun movie, and it was just... one of those things that when you skip school, you wish you could do, and... get away with and be the star of your own life for a day, okay. You know?
If when you look back at high school, was there a Ferris Bueller in your school?
Yes.
Who was it?
It was me.
It was you?
Yeah. Let me ask you this, my friend.
Yes.
When was the first time you skipped your school day, huh?
I was just going to tell that story. The first time I ever skipped school was I asked you because I didn't want to write a test that day. Very Ferris Bueller-like of me. And I know that you had already been skipping classes in the past. So I said, will you skip this class with me? And you're like, yeah, whatever. I don't care. And it was your test, too. And that just started it.
Do you remember what test we skipped?
It was a science test.
Remember the teacher's name?
Mr. Hartley.
Hated that guy.
Yeah, I know.
He's so mean.
Yeah. I didn't like him either.
Didn't help it.
He had a bad reputation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into it and incriminate the man, but he didn't have a great reputation. But what I was getting to was, I thought after that point in time, what I ended up doing in high school was very Ferris Bueller-like, because I skipped quite a bit of classes. As high school
wore on. Yeah, but the first day you skipped school...
was with you.
You were so chicken.
I absolutely was.
Do you recall?
Oh, I was terrified. I thought I was going to get caught. I thought the cops were going to come and find us. But later, me and you were like Ferris Bueller and Sloan. We would skip school a lot together. Going downtown, to Eaton Center. We had a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if art imitates life... this Ferris Bueller married his Sloan, just like he said in the movie.
Well, she said... well, yeah. Did he say... he said that. She said at the end, he's gonna marry me.
But he said to her, let's go get married right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that time we had skipped school? It was the first time we went into, like, the photo booth downtown, Union Center. I don't know what we did that day, but it was a blast. We were, like, two poor kids who barely had two loonies to rub together, but we had a great day.
Yeah.
It was very Ferris Bueller-like.
We did. We would explore our own city and just go places and do things.
Yeah, exactly.
And buy lunch together. 2-for-1 special. Exactly. All that we could afford.
Yeah, we had a great time. And this movie, watching it, kind of reminded me of those days. That's our dog in the background trying to get in on the mic. She's... apparently got something to say herself. But, so this movie, you're saying that it just gave you that feeling of wanting to be the star of your own life.
Yeah.
And that essentially is the theme of this movie, right? The opening monologue where you see Ferris and realize that he was faking his parents out. The thesis of this whole movie is life moves too fast. If you don't stop and take it in, it's gonna go by you, right? I forget exactly what he says, but that is the essence of the movie. And looking back at it, having watched it again recently, I saw just how... I mean, I always knew, but I saw just how much layers there are to this movie, how many things you can take from it. I mean, you can watch it from the perspective of, you know, just a fun, good time movie, comedy you laugh at. But then when you kind of really break down all the different characters in it, it's a coming-of-age story. It's the relationship that kids have with their parents, with their brother and sister, with their best friends, the viewpoint of teenagers and how they view their authority, their school, and how you view the future, really. Mm-hmm. So when you really break it down and take all those little quotes in it and see how Ferris seizes the day, it's an inspiring story.
Mm-hmm.
For those who've never watched it, and shame on you if you haven't, but the story is basically, the synopsis is that Ferris Bueller's almost finished high school, and he decides to skip school one last time before graduation, because it's a beautiful summer day in Chicago, and his friend is Cameron Fry, who's a wealthy kid, but is obviously...
Unhappy,
uncomfortable in his own skin. He borrows his Cameron's father's Ferrari. They go pick up Sloan, who is Ferris's girlfriend, and they just explore the city of Chicago together. All the while, the principal, Ed Rooney, is trying to prove that Ferris is faking his sickness and trying to catch him in the act. And there's all these different hijinks and antics along the way, and it's just a fun movie, but there's There's lots to take from it. So, John Hughes, when you think of that guy, do any other things come to your mind? Do you know all the stuff that this guy had actually done back then?
I think of Breakfast Club. I think of Pretty in Pink. I think of 16 Candles. Molly Ringwald.
He did Home Alone as well.
That's right.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff. And
then he just went MIA.
Yeah, he kind of, later on in his life, he really became kind of a recluse. Almost like a J.D. Salinger, as it were. Mm-hmm. Even on some of his scripts that he was writing, he wouldn't even put his own name anymore. He'd put Edmond Dantès, like Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. Very, very funny. But when I think of John Hughes, to me, he's like the precursor to Nirvana. And what I mean by that is that Nirvana had that song Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy understood. He was Teen Spirit. I don't think anybody has ever captured the mindset of a teenager and the angst or the paranoia or the all the things that teenagers go through, mm-hmm. that insecurity, trying to fit in. Like, this guy really captured that generation, and it's stuff that is timeless, the way that he discussed these things. Like, when you watch Breakfast Club, as old as that movie is now,
such a classic.
The themes in it are so classic.
Yeah.
You know, and the only thing about his movies is that they're pretty much suburban white kids that are being explored. There isn't that much multicultural thing in it.
Yeah.
But the themes are still there. The issues are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those things, as much as these movies are now almost 30 years old, I can't believe Ferris Bueller's Day Off is almost 30 years old. It's timeless. So, the cast. Did you know who some of the people that were being considered for these roles at the time?
No, I've always just taken it for what it was. I never thought of anybody else.
And John Hughes actually said that there was no one else that he thought could play that role except for Matthew Broderick. He thought this was the guy who could capture that that look, that charm, in order for it to come through with the humor and the lines. He wrote it, actually, with him in mind.
With Broderick, oh yeah.
Yeah. Molly Ringwald wanted to play Sloane, but he said that the role wasn't big enough for her because she was his big star at the time.
Yeah, wasn't she like his like favorite?
Yeah.
Like, people couldn't even, I remember hearing in an interview where oh my goodness, I can't believe I forgot. Okay. There's the Basket Case, the Princess, the Brain. What's the other one?
The jock?
The jock.
Mm-hmm. And the bully? Is he a bully? You're referring to Breakfast Club?
Yeah. So there was an interview where the guy that played the jock, what's his name?
Emilio Estevez?
No, not the jock. The other one.
Judd Nelson.
Yeah. Judd Nelson. Who was he again? Yeah. I know the character he played, but what was
it? He was the troublemaker.
No, but what was it? There's a Basket Case, a Princess, the jock, the Brains. What was he again?
I don't know.
Oh, you suck.
No, you suck. You're the one who brought it up.
We're okay. Going off course here.
Go ahead. It's okay. Go ahead.
He was so enthralled in that role that he was a jerk all the time, even off screen.
Okay.
And when he would... The rebel. There you go. And so then he would go ahead and still be in character.
Yes.
And make fun of Ringwald.
Yes.
For whatever reason. And John Hughes would get upset. Like, I think it came to the point where he was going to fire him.
Yeah.
Because he was very protective of her, and that was his star. And nobody could say anything. No one could do boo. Like, she can only work a certain amount of hours, and he never interfered with that, like, for a day.
Right.
I think she could only do, like, what, 6 hours or something, and then that's it.
Yeah, I think we were watching Breakfast Club a few months ago, and they had it. It was almost like a pop-up video style where they would give you these little facts about how the movie was made and things that they did. But, yeah, Judd Nelson was driving everybody crazy. He was literally got into that role to the point where even the person he was antagonizing in the movie, he kept doing it throughout the production of the movie to really capture that character. But originally, you're not completely off course, Alan Ruck, who plays Cameron Fry, had tried out for that role that what? John Nel- that Judd Nelson had gotten in The Breakfast Club. He wanted to play that role. But he didn't get it, obviously. And John Hughes remembered him, remembered mm-hmm. that role. And he had offered him this one. Emilio Estevez was actually also up for the role of Cameron Fry, and he turned it down. So Alan Ruck was always grateful to Emilio Estevez that he had turned it down. Do you know how old these guys were, all of these actors at the time? I don't know the age of Matthew Broderick. I know that Mia Sara was, who played Sloane, was only 18. But do you know how old Alan Ruck was at the time?
Let's say 20-something.
Okay, he was 29.
What?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? So he was worried that he'd be out of touch with, you know, being a teenager and knowing what was cool. And he's like, but that's my character anyways. Like, my character would not be in the know.
Right.
As it were. So what does it matter? I'm just going to be myself. And you wouldn't have guessed that he was 29.
Wow.
I mean, you probably just figured he's in his 20s because I'm asking you this question.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But, yeah, he was 12 years older than he was supposed to be.
Huh.
And didn't come through, so.
No, you did good.
Yeah, it was great. So, tell me some of your favorite moments of this movie. We don't gotta break down every last little tidbit of it, but tell me some of your favorite moments.
Bueller. Bueller.
You know, his acting career started from that role, that monotone role.
Really?
Yeah, Ben Stein.
Didn't he have, like, a Visine commercial?
He had all kinds of commercials. He even had his own game show. But he had been in a bunch of roles after that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got him that notoriety. That monotone.
I like when the students are just, like, look like they're gonna die. And I think, like, as he's calling out people's names, and he's just so, like, lifeless.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything around him is also lifeless. It's so funny.
It's interesting you bring that up, though, because Ferris says something in the beginning of the movie where he's talking about how he fakes out his parents.
Mm-hmm.
When he's like, you know, I do this, and you know,
he licks his palms to make them clammy.
Yeah, I lick my palms, and he says it's kind of childish and stupid, mm-hmm. but
it
so
works.
Is high school.
Right.
So when you look back at high school and how it's portrayed in from this movie, would you agree with that portrayal of it being like, kill me now? I'd rather be dead than having to listen to this teacher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ask me the question again.
Do you remember high school like that, where it was just so torturous and the teachers were just so out of touch?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You
oh, yeah.
Right? I had
you know who reminds me of, like, a lifeless teacher? Our math teacher. The one that failed you. Sorry to put
Miss
you out
Tofan?
There.
Miss
Tofan? No.
Yeah, that was the one.
Was it Tofan? No. I'm talking about Mr.
Plaskett.
Yes!
And he'd have his head down and he'd just wave his hands around.
Yeah, and he was like, I don't understand why you guys
don't understand why you apply yourselves.
It was just, you just have those teachers. Like, you just,
yeah.
Sometimes they shake their head, but you shake your head back.
Yeah.
It's like, but, you know, make me feel like I don't know, give me something.
It's just they've been doing what they do for so long
that there's no
more thrill for them. There's no more, you know, that fire of wanting to change a life is not there. And you know, I hope that even today, teachers who watch this movie, for instance, might help them to see, like, no wonder these kids don't respond to us. No
yeah, but
wonder
some teachers might watch it and agree with people like Rooney, who, you know, are out to get the bad, rebellious kid who's a bad influence to everybody else in their class.
Guy.
You know, I hated Rooney. All from... Everyone
hates something
Rooney.
About that actor that always gave me the creeps.
Haven't I told you that before?
Yeah, no.
All the time?
Yeah, I don't want to get into his personal life, but I think it's a legitimate... If Ed Rooney has ever given you the creeps, you're not wrong for feeling that way. But, okay, Ed Rooney, that guy who's so concerned about this kid missing another day of school and he's going to give a bad example, but what was, like, ultimately, in his frame of mind, what his goals were, look where it ended him, where he ended up at the end of his day.
The back of the school bus,
sitting beside the kid that nobody wanted to sit with. Got a couple kicks to the face. He got attacked by a dog. He lost his shoes. His car was towed. He lost his wallet. You name it, it happened to the guy because he was so upset and resentful because another person was living their life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these, when anybody lives like that, they're miserable all the time.
Yeah, true.
So that I think like that's those lessons that are trying to be shown. Like you could be what that level of responsibility is like to the adult world. But look how miserable these people are. These teachers who are supposedly teaching you something that, to be honest, up to this point, some of the things that I learned in those classes, I still haven't found a usefulness for.
Did you ever have a teacher that thought you were a bad influence to the class?
That thought I was a bad influence to the class?
I think everybody liked you. Like, the teachers liked you.
Teachers liked me?
I think so.
I thought you were going to say the students liked me.
No, but I'm talking about, have you found a teacher, like, did you ever have that back and forth with a teacher? You know what I mean?
Not really. Not somebody who was really out to get me, per se.
I did.
Yeah, well.
I had like three of them.
You had it coming, though, because you didn't just Ferris Bueller the day off. you were more like, oh man, was there a character in that movie that... No, you were like Charlie Sheen. You were just that what? Troublemaker.
Nuh-uh.
No, you know what you were? You were Jeannie. You were Ferris's sister.
What do you mean? How was I Jeannie?
She would tell everybody off in that movie. You weren't afraid to tell anybody off.
But she was jealous and she was like, you know, she wanted everything. Like, she was very selfish. I'm not Jeannie. Take it back.
Okay, you're not Jeannie. What I'm saying is Jeannie was not afraid to tell anybody off in that movie. She spoke her mind. Didn't matter who it was. Would you agree with that? If a teacher got in your face, what would you say? Would you back down and say, sorry, ma'am?
You were there. What would I say?
I don't want to repeat it.
I don't know. Remember. I just know I would end up getting kicked out of class.
And one time, Daph J got kicked out of class, and I had to be the one with the privilege to go and find her. Meanwhile, instead of finding her and telling her to come back to class, I had to wake her up off of the bench that she fell asleep on and wasn't sure what time it was.
What did you do when you went back to class? Because I don't think I went back with you. I stayed on the bench.
You know what? I've been trying to wake you up for work or for school since way back. It's still a challenge.
What did the teacher say when you went into the class?
I had to
go. Wasn't she like upset? She must have been upset.
Oh, yeah. She was pretty upset, that French teacher.
She was Spanish at that time, teaching Spanish class.
Yes, well, she was teaching Spanish. Yeah, because you were telling her how to speak Spanish properly in your house, how they speak it.
Yeah, I don't think she appreciated that.
Yeah, and then you wonder why the teachers were out to get you.
Okay.
Chica. Back to the subject at
hand. Yeah.
Okay. Where were we? We were talking about the characters. The view of the way that authority is being presented in this movie, from the parents to the teachers, do you think it was an accurate portrayal, or did it capture the essence of how teenagers view authority at that time? Because I mean, teenagers really do think that they're smarter than their parents when they're 17, 18 years old. And in some ways we were. Would you agree with that?
I think teenagers are more aware of, like, you know, the technologies, the latest and greatest thing, what's the happening. But when it comes to life and experiences, I mean, your parents are always going to know what's best for you. You're just going to be that kid that doesn't want to hear it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, is that what you're asking for?
Yeah. I just want to get your take on it.
That's what I think.
Yeah. I agree.
I think
both you're more parents, savvy, right?
I think parents and teenagers, when you have the proper communication, you can definitely help each other out. Like, you help each other out. You know what I mean? But if you have that rascal kid that knows how to play the game, they can take their parents for a ride. Mm-hmm. Like, they just right over their heads.
And Ferris is not a bad kid. Like, he's not out doing anything outrightly wrong other than skipping school, right? He's just learned how to get away with it. And it's about making the most of a good day. Like, who wants to waste a beautiful summer day inside of a classroom with Ben Stein? You know what right. I mean? One of my favorite moments of this movie, and it's the most far-fetched one, but it's got to be the parade.
Absolutely.
Do you remember the song that he sings?
Dankeschön. I feel like caressing this mic. Dankeschön.
Okay, American Idol. The whole city gets encapsulated with Ferris's spirit. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a contagious thing, right? When you're positive and when you are able to make the most of any situation that seems unattainable. Like, Ferris had that viewpoint, like, I'm going to get on the float.
Yeah.
What do I have to lose? I'm going to go to this fancy restaurant. What do I have to lose? And it's always taking that thing that might seem impossible, that hurdle, and finding a way to overcome it. Like, there is no impossible with Ferris mm-hmm. throughout the movie. And I think that's the inspirational part of it, right? Like, if you watch this to take that away from it, that's the point. It's not so much about being a slacker.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
It's about... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm having big brain farts. something, the moment.
Seizing the moment.
Yes, that's the word.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Other favorite moments for you come to your mind. I wanna try to relive some of these moments.
The parade is a huge one.
Mm-hmm. And when he does a twist and shout right after. And then he does right a twist after.
And, yeah. That's like, Dankeschön just opens it up. He kind of just flowered out of this cocoon of women.
And he just absorbs it. He soaks it all in.
Yeah. What else do I like? I like when they actually explore their city. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, you know, when they go to the museum and they start, like, posing like the statues in the museum. And they put on the hat and the sunglasses to look as though they're being sophisticated. But at the same time, like, just having fun with the day in the city and with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
I think you have to, and this might sound like, the older I become, I'm finding the less I'm willing to do things like this. Because you feel that there's so much responsibility. And
God, you just feel like you're running out of time. Never mind.
And you get caught up in the mundane things, but you have to. I think it's absolutely necessary for you to call in with a fake cough and have a Ferris Bueller day off. You really do. I referred to it last year as a mental health day, and you're like, oh my God, look at this guy. But it's one of those things where you need to take that time away. And just something as simple as exploring your city, the things that are always there, but you never get that, you never give yourself the luxury to enjoy.
Yeah, but that's not as easy to do when you're an adult, right? How many times do I walk into this house and I tell you that I'm tired of being an adult?
Absolutely.
Like, it's even if you wanted to, even if you had the balls to call your boss and make up some felonious, you know, story of whatever it is that you want to get out of. You can't, depending on the circumstances. You got bills to pay. You got people to feed. And you know what I'm saying? Like, it's tough. You
got all these other things in your mind that you feel got to get done.
Yeah. It's not as easy as it was when we were kids. I hate how we're just born out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're here. We're forced then to go to school. Out of nowhere, we just appear. We have to go to school.
Okay.
Then we gotta get an education.
Okay.
And then I gotta go get a job.
Okay.
What if I wanted to be a duck? You know? Like, just graze in the grass and then go for a, a little paddle.
You'd rather be a duck than a human.
Well, it's just so hard being grown. Tired. Like today. Today, you know what it's like for me to come home.
Okay.
It's such a long commute and it's so tiring. And every day, we apologize for, you know, the TTC is running out of excuses of mm-hmm. why there's always issues on the train. And it just makes a long commute home just longer and more frustrating, and people are miserable and I'm miserable. But today, I got home at such a decent time. Like, I got green lights and everything. I was so excited to be home, I forgot to turn off the car. I grabbed my stuff and I got out of the car. And then I realized I have to shut off the ignition and then lock the door. You know what I mean?
That's why we all need a Ferris Bueller day off. Right?
I just wish I was a duck.
You know what? I think that's just a frame of mind. I really do. I think you just gotta seize the day. The older you become and the more you become concerned with the day-to-day stuff...
Well, it's easy for us to say because we don't have people to take care of except each other.
Yeah, but
you got people with mortgages and car payments and kids and all this business. Like,
life is heavy. Yeah. Like, there's still responsibilities. But if that's all your life is and you're not having a Ferris Bueller day off, you're just going to become a Cameron. Right?
There's a lot of Camerons in the world.
Or you're just going to become an Ed Rooney. You don't want to be Ed Rooney. But that was the difference. I mean, you can't just take day after day after day off. You've got to select those moments to do it, obviously. But you got to make it count. And that's I think, what the key is. It's not just about doing anything you want to do when you want to do it. But if you're going to do something, make it count.
Preach.
I feel bad for Cameron. Speaking of some of the characters in this movie... I love when him and Ferris are together, though, because Ferris brings out a side of him that is, he's just drowning in his own sorrow. And I think, again, that's...
If you were living in that house with his dad not paying him no mind and all this business, yeah, I would be sad, too.
And you know what's interesting? That you never see the family life of any of these characters to have an idea of where they come from, but you feel it. Mm-hmm. And you see the impact that it has with just them expressing it.
Yeah.
And I think it's, even in today's world, 30 years later, I think it's still a commentary on what can make or break the kids in your house, right? They need that attention. And if they don't see, like, do you remember what Cameron's biggest, one of the biggest things that killed him was, like, emotionally inside?
His dad loved his car more than he cared about him.
Yeah. That was the terrible. That was horrible. The being in love with material things that can't respond back to you. But he even said, "My parents, they marry each other, and all they do, they hate each other's mm-hmm. guts. They mm-hmm. just they live together, but there's no love there."
Yeah.
So it gave him this horrible view of the world based on it. Kind of made him hopeless.
Yeah.
And really affected his aspiration. Mm-hmm. He didn't know what he wanted to do with his life. And he was a rich kid.
Yeah.
Right? He already kind of had it made, but he had all of this pressure from his father, and then there was no love in the house. So it made him have no aspiration. Whereas, on the flip side, what do you think was the biggest difference for Ferris? Because you don't really see his family life. What do you think his made him so opposite of Cameron?
I'm gonna go with the obvious and say his family.
You think?
Well,
I mean, it's not something that's really conclusive. He just, his parents had a weakness for him. But you don't really see...
I don't know. I just think he was just comfortable in his own skin. And he was happy to just live life to the fullest. Even though he was a teenager, like, he saw the most in everything. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So, I just think his outlook on things are what allowed him to excel. You know, maybe he wasn't the, you know, top grade student in his class or whatever, but he was loved by everybody. Like, everybody liked him. He didn't have any enemies. People were like,
sending him candy grams, and there was the big balloon.
There was the big water thing. Save Ferris. Like, he was just a likable guy, and I think that's important. If you can't like yourself, then nobody else will, right? But if you're comfortable in your own skin, then who can stop you?
Yeah, exactly. That's,
He was a righteous dude.
I like when you come up with those quotes out of nowhere, and it's the perfect timing. Yeah, no, it's true, like... It's really, I mean, you know, you can't paint a brush and say that, oh, as long as you have this viewpoint, everything will be okay. But so much of what we become, so much of what we can do and what we fight against, because we all have those moments where we fight against negative feelings. But when you're so positive like that, and it's, you're positive that it rubs off on other people.
Yeah.
It's only, I think it can only have a benefit for you. Like, when you give off that positivity, which I think Ferris was also concerned about. As much as he wanted to have that great day on his own, he didn't want to explore the city by himself.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted Cameron with him. He wanted Sloan with him. He wanted to not just drive the Ferrari, but have the top down with his friends.
Yeah.
And go to the ball game with them, and go to the museum. The city of Chicago, it's usually the city that is in John Hughes movies. I think he's a local of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to go there.
Me too.
When I watch this movie, I'd love to go there. Do you remember when we used?
Although, isn't it the murder capital of?
The U.S.?
Yeah.
I know they had a high murder rate. Doesn't
Kanye always say that? Murder capital. No, that was Jay-Z.
Uh-huh. But that was from Kanye.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Here's what Kanye says. He doesn't have all the answers.
Yeah, but I want to go somewhere and get killed.
Not going to go there and get killed. First of all, kilt is something that Scottish people wear when they blow the bagpipes. You're going to go there and get killed.
Guy.
Murdered.
Remember when we were looking into going to Chicago? Mm-hmm. And they actually have... Fellas, kids, you listening up? There's a Ferris Bueller...
Tour?
Tour. Takes you to all the hot spots that he went to.
I want to do that.
Let's do it.
Remember when we used to watch My Boys? They did that in one of their final episodes or a season finale. They had a Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That was a good show.
That was a good show. And they actually did all the things that he did.
Mm-hmm.
It had a lot of cultural impact, this movie. As much as it's...
I think all John Hughes movies did, though.
Yeah. But would you say that this movie in particular is... You can't say anything really about The Breakfast Club not having cultural impact. Because it does. It's a classic. But would you say that out of those groups of movies, the John Hughes movies that came out during those... years, this one here is in a class by itself?
I think it's the from the John Hughes movies that I remember and like so much. I think this is the one that is like its lightest. It's not so heavy like everything else is.
I think it is heavy, but it's done in a way that doesn't feel so tragic.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, it still has its undertone of something.
Right.
But it's not overwhelming the film.
Right. Yes.
You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes,
like, in
yes.
Breakfast Club, there's those, like, you know, when they start dancing and then Emilio Estefez, like, screams because he's, like, all high mm-hmm. in the library and stuff. Like, they had those moments, but... It would get deep, like, throughout the whole movie, from beginning to end.
Yeah.
Essay
yeah.
was revolving around them
there and, was a lot what of conflict.
They have to, and what they have to live with individually, their own challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't know. I think it was a really well-balanced... Like, you forget that you're watching something that's pretty that has some heavy connotation to it.
And I think one of the major things about the reasons why is because I think for me, this is the first time that I've ever seen the fourth wall broken, where the character is talking to you. Mm-hmm. Right from the start. You're there with him. You're in on it with him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of this movie's charm, is that throughout it, he comes back to you and you're always involved in it.
Yeah.
And as well, some of the other influences that this has had with the end of credit scene. The guys who, one of the main producers for Marvel Studios, says that these type of movies were big influences on what they do now with those end credit scenes, to stay behind and see what's going to happen or see what's going to be said, because, you know, they grew up watching these movies. So, mm-hmm. you know, things like Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Back to the Future, where they had the to be continued, mm-hmm. the little teasers. And in Back to the Future Part 2, they had the trailer for Part 3 played right after the credits. So you stayed behind and you got treated to something.
Right.
So these type of things...
It's like now it's a staple to have something at the end of a movie.
Right. And Ferris Bueller was one of those...
It's almost like you sit down and watch a movie and it finishes, and when you see people get up, you're like, really? Right. Do you not know at this point that this movie's gonna have... An alternate ending or something additional. Like, you look at people and you shake your head.
Yeah.
And where are you going?
Like, how wicked would it have been to be in the theater in 1986, staying at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off? I don't know if people stayed at the end of the credits back then, but to have him come out in his robe and be, you're still here?
It's over.
Like, priceless. Like, from beginning to end, The little nuances of this movie are just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I never get it. This is a movie I can watch once every year, if not twice every year.
Do you have any favorite quotes?
Oh, man. I love the thing that he said about high school, about how it was childish, silly and childish, just like licking your palms to stay home. But all those little correlations that he does with, where he talks about having a test in school, mm-hmm. about European socialism.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a waste of time. Why do I gotta go there? I don't live in Europe. I don't plan to live in Europe. So what do I care if they're socialist? And then he talks about fascists, if they were fascists. Mm-hmm. And he says, I don't believe in any isms.
Yeah.
That whole spiel he does about the isms.
Yeah.
And then I forgot what he says, but it's something about, even if I did, it wouldn't matter. I still don't have a car.
Right.
So just that attitude, that carefree attitude that he has, but it makes sense. Like, as much as he has, that's it. He says, I don't condone fascism or any ism for that matter. Isms, in my opinion, are not good. A person should not believe in an ism. He should believe in himself. I quote John Lennon, I don't believe in Beatles. I just believe in me. Good point there. After all, he was the walrus. I could be the walrus. I still have to bum rides off people. You know, he's just bitter about not having a car throughout the movie. But Genie does.
Which is probably why he eyed that Ferrari so hard.
Oh, man. But when he looked at that Ferrari, mm-hmm. and he was wearing the suit at the time. Mm-hmm. Man, just, you know, every time I think about this movie and I think about what a great day that was. How long he made that day.
Yeah.
That was in a 2-hour movie, you really felt like, wow, how much time did they have in this day? It's great. We got to do a Ferris Bueller Day Off. On a real work day. We got to do it. What'd you think of his sister? I don't want to look over Jennifer Grey from Dirty Dancing fame.
You know what? I see her in this movie and I don't think baby.
No.
She's completely different. Did she get her nose job by then?
No, she didn't.
But she's a completely different person. She's just bitter. Yeah. And just bitter. I don't know, man.
Would you be bitter, though? You know she was in this before Dirty Dancing.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
If Ferris Bueller was your brother and he was getting away with everything.
No, man.
And her parents thought she was crazy. Even the parents.
Guy, you know what I love? When her mother picks her up at the at the station, and she like runs all the stop signs, gets pulled over by the cops. One of my, it's not a quote, but I love it. Where the dad comes home and the mom's like, "You won't believe what I where I'm just coming from. I had to get Jeannie from the police station." And then he looks at her with these endearing eyes. He puts his arm around her and says, "I think we should shoot her."
They had no sympathy for her.
It's like, you're right. The parents knew that she was psycho. Like, yeah. She was just miserable. And
but that could be why. Because of the way they viewed her. They had this love for Ferris, and she was, like, second tier. She could never get away with that stuff.
Not me, man. Like, if that was, like, my brother. Like, I know that I would cover for my siblings for certain things. You know what I mean? Like, if they were in danger and something was up, before I bait them out, I would chew them out myself. Yeah. I know this because it's happened.
Yeah.
Right? But I know that I would back them up. Like, I wouldn't bait them out to my parents. Why would I do that?
She was a little bit cooler about it. He probably would have taken her with him.
Right?
Right. But she did get to meet the boy in the police station, Charlie Sheen, in true Charlie Sheen fashion. It was like a precursor to what he would become. Like, what are you in here for? Drugs.
And like, you look at that, you have to laugh a little harder.
Yeah, because it rings art imitating life again. But I don't think anything is as quotable as Jeannie saying to Charlie Sheen that her friends call her Shauna. And the music plays in the background.
Shauna. Right?
It's so good. Man, the John Hughes, I don't know what it was about his understanding of those years of a teenager, but he captured it perfect. And mm-hmm. He made a classic. Love this movie. I think that's the one. Ferris Bueller. Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Any final thoughts, Daphne J, before we close out in this episode?
Any final thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is a good one.
You have fun?
Yeah, it's one of those movies. I don't get tired of watching it. I do like watching it. And even still, like, I find like when I watch it, there's stuff I pick up on.
Yeah.
That I don't remember.
Yeah.
And if you do recall, you're like, oh yeah. Like that kind of moment with the movie. I gotta say, the close calls in the movie too was cool.
Well, that's what makes
right, it. Right when they were in the cab and they realized that Paris's dad is in the cab, and like just like that they switch and he realizes that Sloan, and then Sloan's like making kissy faces to Paris's dad. That was a little bit much, but whatevs.
Oh, it was perfect.
It was funny.
Yeah, you know, even Lady Barbara Bush. She paraphrased this movie to a college, Wellesley College, to find joy in life. Because she says, as Ferris Bueller said in his Day Off, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what else is there to say? That's a mantra everybody should consider every day of their life. And to, if in the best of their ability, if they can do it, you need to take a Ferris Bueller Day Off. And the close calls is what makes it even more fun. So you teasing me for being scared of skipping school for the first time. And you know what's funny? Is my mom knew I skipped school that day. And I don't know how. She just knew there was something. But she didn't say, did you skip school? But she knew I did something. Because
you had that guilt all written all over your face. It was so pathetic.
But she bought it.
What do you mean she bought it?
She didn't. She never found out until
she's going to find out now.
Well, if she is listening, Mom, it was all Daphne's fault. She brought me down that road of rebellion.
You admitted approximately 30 minutes ago that you didn't want to write a test, and so you approached me. Hence, you are the instigator of said skipping of the science school.
You should have been the one to be responsible and say, listen, we gotta go write our test.
Me? I skipped the day before. I think I care to skip again.
You know what it was about?
What made me confident
in skipping class from that point on was how good you were at forging signatures and notes. You became my personal forger.
I have to say, I wasn't just... When I was in the fifth grade, people would come and ask me to forge their notes, the signatures of their parents.
Oh, so you had a because I had really nice
penmanship. You've seen what are you laughing at? You've seen me.
It's true.
I have some pretty nice writing.
It is true.
Like I knew how to sign my mother's signature better than my dad's. So when I needed something, it was pretty easy. But I was like a Ferris in the sense of like I wasn't a bad skipper. Seed. No. You know what I would do? Me and my friends, we would skip school, walk to No Frills, okay? And we would buy juice boxes and cookies.
Well, rebels.
And then rebels. We would walk to a little parquet and swing.
That's not a Ferris Bueller.
It's not a Ferris Bueller. What can you do when you're on a dime? Like, you can't do nothing. We had $3 each, if that. We would pool our money together and get, like, a little Happy Meal on the side out of No Frills. That's what we would do.
Yeah, you made the most of it.
But whatevs.
Whatevs.
I wasn't driving at the time.
At our high school? If you had a car, you were worshipped. We were just happy to have a bus pass. You were
Asian. True. For real, though. Who else had a car except the Asian people?
Chris Johnson had a car for a little bit, but that was his mom's car. I had the baby seat in the back. It was a bad look. Anyways, thank you guys for listening to our movie special of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You can feel free to contact us at Cave of Solitude. Sorry, I'm getting it all wrong. CaveOfSolitude.com is the website. You can find it there. Download our episodes from our site. You can go to email us at CaveOfSolitude@Outlook.com and check us out on Instagram as well. So we will be signing off. Hope everybody enjoyed the episode, and we will talk to you soon. See you later.
I saluted like the Sausage King of Chicago.
Yep. I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.